Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Around the state, you may have seen some help wanted signs. Vermont's workforce needs a boost, and someone needs to pay for our pension system. But population growth brings with it a whole host of challenges. The lack of affordable housing, the effects on our natural environment and climate change, to name just a few. Later in the show, we're going to talk with Vermont's treasurer, Mike Pichek, about the role that state investment can play in growing our numbers in a responsible way. But first, we are joined today by Kevin Chu. He's the executive director of the Vermont Futures Project. It's a nonprofit think tank, and their goal is to increase the state's population to 802,000, yes, a symbolic number, by 2035. That's about 155,000 more people in the next 11 years. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Michaela. Happy to be back.
And listeners, you can join this conversation as well. What do you think about growing Vermont's population? What concerns do you have or ideas for how to do it? Give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211. You can also email us to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, as some of you already have. All right, Kevin, before we get an update on what you've been working on in the past year since you were last on Vermont Edition, give us a brief backstory on the Vermont Futures Project. For those who aren't familiar, how did the organization come to be?
Certainly. So the Vermont Futures Project launched in an official capacity around 2015. It emerged from the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, where the Chamber Foundation organization and the Chamber work in the policy space, advocating on behalf of the business community to create conditions for economic vitality. The Futures Project was created to bring a consistent data and research voice to those conversations. Oftentimes, we see policy can get influenced by the loudest voice in the room or the opinion of the moment, whatever's trending on social media, for better or worse. And it's important to have that data and research perspective in those conversations.
So share some data with us, Kevin. What do we know about Vermont's population and how those numbers have changed?
Certainly. So Vermont's current population is about 647,000. Now, when we break that up in terms of age distribution, we can see some very unique qualities that make Vermont stand out in terms of national data. So we are one of the oldest states by median age. There's about 135,000 Vermonters between the ages of 50 to 64, and that certainly has implications on the workforce topic that I know we'll get into. We also have the lowest fertility rate in the U.S. So when we take a look at the homegrown talent supply, the number of kids going through our K-12 system, there's only about 5,300 total 12th graders in the state of Vermont. And you compare that to the estimated number of retirees per year, according to the Vermont Department of Labor, that's about 14,800. So those are a few data points to anchor this conversation.
Wow, big difference. Vermont has the lowest fertility rate in the country. Fascinating. So we might take for granted that it's important to have more people, or not take for granted, but just assume that it's a good thing. But why exactly is it important for Vermont to grow its population? Why do we need these new people?
Certainly. So there are some economic realities that Vermonters are facing right now in terms of the property taxes and education finance, some of the challenges with healthcare costs. And these can all be traced back to some of the demographic drivers. When we have a shrinking tax base, a shrinking number of working age adults relative to the young and the old, that puts pressures on that workforce to be able to sustain these vital services that help people thrive in our communities.
So the goal here is 802,000 people. And Vermont did briefly achieve that goal this year during the total solar eclipse in April. We learn from that event?
Nothing broke.
Is your job done? You just had to make it past 800,000 once and then you can retire?
I wish that were the case. And hopefully some of the visitors considered staying as well. That would certainly help move us forward. So to get to 802,000, that would represent about 2% growth per year over the next decade. what we learned during that moment of the solar eclipse, I think that one of the lasting memories for myself and many other Vermonters was just that shared sense of humanity, the moment that totality hit. It didn't matter whether the person sitting next to you was born and raised in Vermont or visiting from elsewhere. Didn't matter what the color of their skin was, who they love. We just felt this connectedness. And that's what I hold on to. I feel like the solar eclipse gave us a glimpse of what the future of Vermont could be. There was a lot of energy and vitality throughout the state, and that's a glimpse of what the future of Vermont can be. Mm.
And a lot of people scrambling for houses, hotel rooms, Airbnbs, and we'll talk about that housing element in just a moment. First, let's take a call. And listeners, if you have questions about growing Vermont's population, maybe some concerns or ideas for how to do it, give us a call at 800-639-2211. We have Robert on the line in South Hero. Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. Yes. So it's interesting that Kevin brought up the solar eclipse. And one of the issues that I saw, I mean, I'm always welcoming everybody, irrespective of where they came from. We had visitors here, family and others, during the eclipse. But the aftermath of that, the traffic, for instance, was horrible. So if we add another 15% to our population in 10 years, the traffic is just going to get worse. It's already bad in some places. Mm. So I think the quality of life is going to be impacted negatively in a number of different measures. And so I don't understand why we need to grow. Well, I guess the Chamber of Commerce wants to make more money, but it's really going to degrade our quality of life. So the Chamber of Commerce gets more money and gets wealthier, but the rest of us lose out.
Robert, thank you so much for voicing your opinion and your concerns there. Kevin, I know you did a listening tour around Vermont over the past year, and I'm guessing that you've maybe heard other folks with Robert's concerns about quality of life, about traffic, and maybe also about the motivations of the state in doing this. Can you address those points for him?
Certainly. The motivation behind our proposal to grow the population is really to improve the quality of life and make Vermont a place that anybody can thrive regardless of where they came from or where they are currently on the socioeconomic spectrum. It's about creating opportunity. That's what gives people hope for the future. As you mentioned, I had a chance to travel around the state. I was looking at the number of in-person interactions I had over the past year. I spoke with over 4,000 Vermonters, received input from people from all 14 counties. And that was a really fun, rewarding part of my job, because when we think about economic growth, we need to anchor it to the hopes, dreams, and ambitions of Vermonters. Growth towards what? And what I heard from Vermonters in terms of what they say they want and need, some of the things that come up: affordability, housing, workforce opportunity, youth retention. They want to be able to feel like there's a future that they can recommend to the kids that are growing up here so that we don't see this exodus of talent every single year. Something that has stood out to me in my research from a couple of years ago, it was a Vermont Public poll, VPR and Vermont PBS back then. And one of the questions that was asked is, if you were to advise an 18-year-old on where to build a successful life and career, would you recommend that he or she stay in Vermont or leave? And 42% of respondents said leave Vermont. Mm. Right. And that's the narrative that we're trying to change. How do we change Vermont to become a place that anybody can thrive, that anybody can find opportunity? Right now, the story is young people have to leave to find opportunity elsewhere.
Mm. We got an email just now from Jessica in Huntington, who writes, "The goal of 155,000 is too much. We will never be able to provide housing for all those people. Yes, some of our population will be dying, but in the meantime, still too much. Maybe 30,000 to 40,000 people to take all the open jobs we have." So a couple of things are in there. Kevin, let's start with this number, 155,000. How exactly did you all land on that as the goal, other than, you know, the beauty of picking 802,000 as your number?
Yes. I mentioned the number of high school grads, the number of projected retirements. We did a workforce gap analysis. Those were two of the main factors. We also looked at average college graduate retention. Vermont ranks dead last in the country there. We looked at the projected number of new jobs created, net in and out migration. So what we found was the annual workforce gap was about 13,500 people that we need to be adding into the Vermont economy, the workforce, each year.
Every year. Oh, okay.
That's right. So that's due to some of these underlying demographic imbalances in terms of the age distribution of our population. So when we project that out to 2035, 2040, the numbers start to get in the 800,000 range. And yes, there was some intentionality behind picking 802 because it's Vermont's number. We want this to be a goal that people take pride in. And 802 is so symbolic in that regard.
Mm. Well, we put out a call on Instagram for folks to share their thoughts on increasing Vermont's population. And we received a really wide range of responses. Some positive responses included one from a person who says, my boyfriend and I might be two of those 100,000 people moving to Vermont. Another person says, we need more people to bring new experiences and skills and help Vermont thrive. Somebody else said, we need more people in the labor market, full stop. So many people, though, brought up housing. They asked, where will all of these people live? So let's dive into that now, Kevin. I know you've also projected not just the number of people that Vermont needs to meet its workforce requirements, but also the number of housing units that we need to be building. What do you project?
So for a population size of 802,000, we've also set a goal to grow the number of non-seasonal housing units to 350,000 by the same year, which is an increase of about 80,000 units. Certainly, that's a primary concern and topic that a lot of people have voiced as I've traveled around the state, the practicality of reaching that goal. And yes, it will mean that we have to accelerate the construction of new housing units. That is actually an opportunity to help Vermont move forward in terms of reaching some of its climate goals as well. Sustainable and smart growth can help to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and the emerging data and research shows that can accelerate Vermont's timeline in terms of reducing our overall greenhouse gas emissions. The other thing, too, is smart strategies that use data can figure out ways to put people closer to job opportunities, to the services like healthcare that they need to access. And if we have a critical threshold of density, it also brings new options like public transportation into the fold. So there's a way to go about it. Certainly, if we added 155,000 people overnight, we would have struggles in terms of our built environment, but this is going to be an incremental and intentional process to get there.
Okay. Yeah, because that was one of my questions for you, Kevin. This is concern that I think is felt by many people around wanting to move forward on the goal of adding more people to the state, but doing that kind of a little bit slower than moving towards the goal of having enough housing. We don't have enough housing for the people who already live here. Are you working with lawmakers, with developers? How are you trying to keep these two goals sort of in line?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've spoken with folks at the Vermont Housing Finance Agency, from government agencies. I've spoken with legislators. And yes, we need to be able to keep multiple goals in mind at the same time. One data point that really gives me a lot of hope, actually, is this idea of latent capacity. So in traveling around the state, I spoke with leaders at the community level, especially in rural communities, that said, you know, my town or my village actually have fewer people today than it did at one point in its history. I remember a conversation with the mayor of Rutland, Mike Dungis. He said, Rutland had tens of thousands more people in the past than it used to have today. So if we add up that latent capacity, if we just returned every town to its historical peak, Vermont would have 70,000 more people today. That gets us almost halfway to 802,000. And that means population growth for the state overall can also be a rural revitalization strategy. I've heard from many communities that say, we want growth, we want it here.
Yeah, listeners, if you are in a town or a city that has shrunk in size, tell us why you think that is and what you think could turn around that trend. You can call in at 800-639-2211. We're speaking right now with Kevin Chu, the executive director of the Vermont Futures Project, about population growth. Kevin, before we take a break, I want to note the fact that a lot of people have, as you just mentioned, written to us to say we want to see population growth, not just in Chittenden County, though. A listener who asked to stay anonymous writes, Vermont doesn't have the resources available to support an increase in population. Transportation is poor. You can't live anywhere outside of Chittenden County without a car, so we can't currently provide for the population we have now. A person on Instagram wrote, I would really like to see more investment in areas outside of Chittenden County. Talk to us about this goal.
As I mentioned, being able to connect with those rural communities and hearing their needs was so insightful for helping us work towards building an economic action plan. Yes, most of the growth historically has been in and around Chittenden County, and we see in the data that rural areas have depopulated. So we also need to think about business growth and economic development as part of this strategy, because that can put job opportunities closer to rural communities. It can be a reason for a young person to stay in Vermont and choose a community outside of Burlington. If the job opportunities are there, it provides hope for the future, right? Those job opportunities are what people will stay or even relocate to Vermont for.
Let me share a couple more messages we received on Instagram. One person wrote, we need more people. More people, more jobs filled, happier Vermonters. Another person wrote, we need more people and more diversity, please. Then on the flip side, somebody says, it is also important to support those who want to stay in Vermont but can't afford to. And somebody else wrote that they support the idea of population growth as long as, quote, Vermont doesn't become Florida. Kevin, you grew up in Vermont. Did you ever consider leaving yourself?
I grew up in Vermont, and I look forward to growing old here, too. I did spend 1 year away from Vermont after I graduated from Burlington High School. I did a postgrad year at a boarding school called Kent in Connecticut, and that was enough for me to know that I wanted to come back to Vermont, and I was fortunate enough, privileged enough to attend Middlebury College. And ever since then, my journey has been here in Vermont, and I look forward to continuing that journey.
Well, speaking of college, you went to Middlebury. I remember we talked last year at this time when you came on the show about the fact that, at least according to data we cited last year, Vermont had the lowest percentage of college students who decided to stay in state. Do you know, is that still the case?
I haven't seen an updated data set, but I believe that's still the case, where we're certainly one of the lowest in terms of college graduate retention if we look at national numbers. There are nuances to that, right? Because we attract a lot of young talent from other states. They have social anchors to other communities and may want to go back home after they graduate. But there's the economic realities, too, where we can see where students go after they graduate if they choose not to stay in Vermont. They go to Boston, New York City, D.C., Denver, big cities in California. So they are seeking opportunities that align with their skills and qualifications, which is why I mentioned economic development has to be part of the strategy to grow our population. We need to be able to produce the types of opportunities that align with what those graduates are looking for in order to have a chance at retaining them.
Vermont also has an incentive to try to get Vermonters to stay here and work after college. So the state will help pay off student loans for some students who stay here and work for a few years. Do you believe that incentives like these work? Are they worth the money?
That incentive program, the Green Mountain Jobs and Retention Program, I believe that's what it's called, is a relatively new one. And I'm hopeful that we'll see in the data that it is effective. I think it's worth trying some of these creative solutions. And to reach a goal like 800, 2000, there's no silver bullet. We're going to have to try a lot of different tactics and start to measure what works and what doesn't work and start to scale up the things that do work. But I'm hopeful that this initiative is a step in the right direction.
There are a number of other initiatives or incentives that the state government has funded over the years to try to get people to move here or to stay here. We'll talk about some of those with our next guest, State Treasurer Mike Pichek, later in the hour. But I do want to ask you about the worker relocation grants, because there was a very splashy bid to get people to move to Vermont. They would pay, I think it was up to $10,000 for some people to move here and work. Do you think things like that work?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, Michaela, because that program was created to increase demand for Vermont, right? It was an initiative to try to get people interested in coming here. And that was less than a decade ago. So something that gives me a lot of hope in the future of Vermont and optimism that we can actually reach this 802 goal is because in less than a decade, we're in a very different scenario now. There is demand for Vermont. People want to be here. We see that reflected in the housing market. We see that reflected in some of the pressures that come with growth. But it's a much better position to be in as a state where people actually desire your place. People want to come here. People want to relocate here than the opposite scenario where there wasn't demand. We were seeing out-migration between the 2010 and 2020 census. So I remain hopeful that we can step up to the challenge of meeting that demand.
So it was something like an advertising campaign that worked, and now we have to meet that demand
that
it potentially helped create. Well, let's go to the phones here. We have Patrick calling in. Patrick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Patrick. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. You know, I appreciate this show and this topic, and I certainly understand about increasing the population for workforce development and those sorts of things. But I'm just retiring from the state's Emergency Medical Services Advisory Committee, and I wonder if the folks that are trying to recruit residents are taking into account the public safety and public health needs of our community, which, you know, it seems like we're having a really hard time meeting them with the population we have. And I'll hang up and listen to the comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. And your sentiment is echoed by somebody who wrote in on Instagram in response to a prompt that we put on there for today's show. Somebody wrote, "We need to get mental health help for those on our streets." Not to the fact that there's lots of needs that already exist in the state before you think about adding 150,000 more people. Kevin?
People are the solution, not the problem. Healthcare, the mental health needs of our communities, how do we respond to those needs? We have to have the professionals to deliver that care. We have to have the tax base to provide funding to expand those services. And in all of the goals that we have as a state, whether it's health-related, environment, education, what makes these things happen? Doers and dollars. And we have a shrinking tax base and a shrinking workforce. So both of those are going in the wrong direction. So again, this proposal to increase the population is meant to meet the needs of Vermonters. That was why it was so important to travel around the state and listen to what those needs are so that we can anchor our goals and the recommendations to meeting those needs.
A report out this month from our neighbors in New Hampshire shows that New Hampshire also faces population challenges despite a post-COVID spike similar to what we saw here in Vermont. And analyses there suggest that the state's population is going to stop growing and instead start declining around the year 2040. It made me wonder what the comparison is like between Vermont and other states in New England. Are we in a very unique position, or is this something that you're seeing mirrored in other areas?
This is a trend that we're seeing in some of the Northeast, but I had a very interesting conversation with a New York Times reporter about this time last year. He was doing a story on the labor market implications of an aging demographic and wanted to focus on Vermont because we are one of the oldest states by median age. So the discussion was about how Vermont in some ways serves as a leading indicator for what the rest of the country could experience if nothing changes in terms of the trends around fertility and immigration. So other states are watching. Vermont has an opportunity to be a leader. We can be a leader in what to do or what not to do. But Vermont is unique in the regard that we're sort of ahead of the curve nationally. And again, I remain hopeful that we can come up with the solutions here, because if we do, those are solutions that can then be exported to other areas.
Terry is on the line in Brandon. Terry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks, Michaela. This goal sounds wonderful and necessary for many different reasons. My biggest concern is that this is going to require upgrading our infrastructure, our roads, our schools, our sewage treatment plants. And to me, all of this stuff points towards higher property taxes. And that is a really scary thought.
Mm. Yes, a big issue, especially this past legislative session. Thanks, Terry, for calling in. You brought up septic as one of the things that needs to get upgraded. Allison as well wrote us an email and said it is all about septic regulations and waste disposal. There is not enough land to build housing for another 100,000 people with our current septic regulations. Let's talk specifically about some of those infrastructure needs, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beyond housing, we need to think about that community infrastructure, whether it's municipal water, wastewater, broadband was a topic that came up a lot as I traveled around the state. The ability of our grid to handle increased electrical demand. So all of those things are true. And again, it's something that we can plan for and implement incrementally. Again, this isn't about adding 155,000 people overnight. But the long-term projections of being able to grow the population and increase the tax base is to make things more affordable, even for the people who are already here. Right now, to sustain the systems that we already have with a shrinking tax base, it puts increased burden on those taxpayers. So, again, this proposal is meant to increase the quality of life and make Vermont more affordable for everyone.
But we already, I think like Terry is maybe hinting at here, we already have a lot of infrastructure needs and housing needs. In order to attract these new people who will add to our tax base, the people who live here now are going to have to make a pretty big investment on top of the very high investment we are already making in our communities. What do you say to people who have that concern? You say, I can't afford to have my taxes go up in order to one day see our population grow and our tax base grow.
Yeah, I'm seeing excitement and enthusiasm from a variety of partners that want to contribute to solutions. I'm hearing a lot more appetite for public-private partnerships, employers that want to be part of the solution for housing, for infrastructure. Mm. I'm hearing creative tactics like using TIF districts and figuring out the finances to make sure that we alleviate the burden, or at least make it so then we're not placing undue burden on current residents as we pursue some of these long-term goals. So we're in a moment where we don't necessarily have to rely on a single pathway or single tactic in terms of the finances. We can explore those creative partnerships.
Mm. You mentioned TIF districts. Could you explain what those are?
Tax increment financing.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And treasurer might be able to speak more about that.
Perfect. We'll hit a couple acronyms with him, I'm sure. All right. Let's take one more call here. We have Elsie in Brattleboro on the line. Elsie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead. What's your question or comment?
Well, I wanted to comment on two of the things that I see happening down here in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Great.
That take into account trade schools and also the creative economy. GS Precision has a fantastic in-house program where students can come in and get a degree in engineering. And I work with the New England Center for Circus Arts, which is essentially a trade school. It's a three-year professional training program. We have students, young people from all over the world who come here and do a three-year program, and many of them decide to stay. And I think those are two examples of out-of-the-box ways in which we can invite young people to experience Vermont, and then many of them do decide to stay.
Hmm. Thank you so much, Elsie, for calling in and for including the arts economy as part of this conversation. Kevin, I'm guessing on your listening tour of Vermont, you heard from a lot of folks who have similar pride in their community like Elsie does and pointed to initiatives that are bringing in young people, right?
That's right. I've heard inspiring stories from all corners of the state across a variety of industries. And again, it's going to take a collective effort to reach this state goal. But one of the things that we've been very adamant about is this isn't an economic action plan that's top down telling people what to do, where and when. It's about creating a collective vision that then inspires collective action, even at the grassroots level, so that we're all pitching in. The strategies for recruitment and retention in Brattleboro are going to be different than they are in Burlington or the Northeast Kingdom, and that's okay. The solutions to housing in each of those areas will be different. But if we can all pitch in to a collective goal that we've bought into, we're going to see progress.
Hmm. We got an email from Monique who writes, "We need super smart growth and need to be cautious to hold on to our quality of life that we cherish. I don't know how to accomplish this, but I hope it is studied carefully. Never mind that we don't want to become another Florida. I don't even want to become another Massachusetts or New Hampshire." Kevin, did you hear some of these comparisons to other states when you were going around?
I did. And I have to say that the sentiment towards New Jersey was the one I heard most frequently in my travels. So I was
Just note, we love all of our listeners, no matter where you are right now.
That's right. And if you're elsewhere and you're considering Vermont, please come. You're welcome. So I was looking at population density as a metric for quality of life, or at least trying to understand population pressures on an area. Vermont is about 70 people per square mile, compared to New Jersey, which is 1,200 people per square mile. And if Vermont were to grow to 802,000, we'd have about 87 people per square mile. So that's not that much of a bump. And I think if that growth were distributed around the state, we would barely feel it.
Mm. We got an email from Amy who writes, "How about the college graduates who returned to Vermont 10 to 40 years after graduation with established careers and the goal of small town living?" Kevin, is there a way to target folks like this who had a specific connection to Vermont, maybe left, went back to their home state, and now we try to pull them back?
Definitely. And those seem to be the types of folks that we do have historically some success in terms of attracting. Vermont is distinguished in terms of its quality of life. People think of this as a great place to raise a family. So folks who are in their 30s or 40s and considering where to raise a family, especially if they grew up here and have family nearby, those are folks who are likely to come. The other reason why is because practically from an economic perspective, they may be in a point in their career where they have the income and the wealth to be able to make that decision. But we also need pathways for those recent grads to be able to say yes to Vermont. I've spoken with college students that say they would love to stay, but they're worried about being able to find housing or to earn a wage that lets them set up success for the later parts of their life as well.
Hmm. Kevin, what is coming down the pike for you? What is next that the Vermont Futures Project is working on in the short and medium term?
So we will be launching our economic action plan in the coming months, and it will include recommendations for how to practically move forward and make progress on these goals. When we think about workforce, there's an efficiency aspect to it. How do we get people who are already here engaged in the workforce if they're currently disconnected? Then we also have to think about expansion strategies. How do we bring more people here? We have to think about this through an environmental lens, an equity lens, in addition to the economic lens. So that report, when we launch it, will kick off an educational campaign where we bring the ideas back out to the communities that help to contribute to them, and then we can start thinking about implementation. And that gets really exciting. We can go from being a think tank to a do tank.
Kevin Chu is with the Vermont Futures Project. If you are moving to Vermont, Kevin will come help you unpack your U-Haul. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and thank you to our listeners for their great questions.
Here to discuss the state's role is Vermont's treasurer, Mike Pichek. He was elected to the position in 2022 and is currently seeking a second term as Vermont's treasurer. Mike Pichek, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Michaela. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we are very glad to have you. So one of your main responsibilities as treasurer is to maintain the state's pension system. How important is population growth to a healthy pension system in Vermont?
Well, it's really, the population growth and ensuring that we have a strong workforce is really fundamental to everything economically in our state, including the pension systems. One of the things that we also focus on is ensuring that we have a strong credit rating from the rating agencies. Having a strong credit rating means we spend less money when we borrow for important infrastructure investments. It saves taxpayers money. And one of the things that those rating agencies always point out about Vermont is, hey, your population is getting older and your workforce is getting smaller because of that, and your population isn't growing the same way that other states are. So it's something that they point out to us as a fundamental economic issue for the long term in our state. And I would say that we are fortunate that we have seen changes in that trajectory following the pandemic. But it is a critical thing for our foundational economic benefit.
Well, we have a number of folks on the line with questions or comments about population growth. Let's start with David in Montpelier. David, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a 30-some-year-old, recent move back to Vermont type person, and I found a good job, and I'm looking for an apartment. Eventually, I would like to own a home, but my question is really, if we're trying to attract 150,000 people to move to the state, and that's going to put more demand on our housing, and a lot of these people make more money than we do, what do you have to say to someone like me who's in my 30s who wants to buy a home eventually? What can you do for real Vermonters in my position that are looking to buy eventually? And with this increased demand, how is that going to work?
Yeah, thank you, David, for your question. Welcome back to Vermont, and good luck with that housing search. I sure know it's hard. State Treasurer Mike Pichek, what role does your office have in the affordable housing crisis that Vermont faces?
Yeah, so I'll say David hit the problem on the head. Pre-pandemic, we were focused on how do we increase the demand for people wanting to live in Vermont. You know, there was an incentive plan that the legislature rolled out, and that was one of our policy initiatives. And, you know, that attracted a few hundred people. But, even in the survey that we conducted to sort of review that program, people cited Vermont's natural beauty and outdoor recreational opportunities as the number one reason why they moved to Vermont. So we knew that we had something really special about our state. I call it the Vermont advantage. But the question was, you know, how do you increase that demand? Post-pandemic, when people are really reevaluating their lives, they're reevaluating what kind of communities they want to live in, what kind of lives they want to lead, where they want to raise their families. Folks like David, I think, have made the choice to move back to Vermont or move to Vermont. And the ability to work remotely has obviously fueled the ability of many people being able to do that. So what that has meant is we've seen a much larger increase in population the last couple of years than we have for the entire decade preceding the pandemic. We have more people moving to our state. They're higher income earners, as David pointed out. It's put a tremendous amount of pressure on housing. It's our number one economic issue. It's our number one social issue as well. If we don't solve the housing crisis, we're not going to solve so many of the issues that are tied up into the housing crisis, including mental health treatment, substance use disorder treatment, things like high medical costs and access to medical services. So it's our number one issue. How do we work on that issue? You know, we had an initiative at the beginning of my term to provide $100 million of low-interest loans to housing developers to support affordable housing and workforce housing throughout the state of Vermont. That has rolled out quite successfully so far. We're supporting about 1,100 new units across the state of Vermont. There's a lot more work left to be done, but I think one of the strategic initiatives that we need to focus on is building more senior housing. If we can build more senior housing, then many of the homes that those seniors are living in right now, the 2 or 3 or 4 bedroom homes that have many, the bedrooms that are going unused, you know, freeing up those homes for a young family so that folks like David can buy those homes is going to be really critical. So I think the focus has to continue to be on the traditional affordable housing, on the workforce housing. But one thing we'd like to see in the future that we're working on is an initiative to support more senior housing, freeing up some of that housing stock across Vermont.
Hmm. Thanks. We're speaking with Treasurer Mike Pichek, if you're just joining us. Let's go down to Sharon in Essex. Sharon, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. I was calling about the sort of the flaw in the goal of increasing a tax base, especially in the light of property taxes. Property taxes never exceed the services, you know, meaning infrastructure, town staff, whatever. They greatly exceed it. So every house you build, every new family you bring in, that's going to raise property taxes significantly, and not just getting the infrastructure in forever. So just say that goal sort of irks me, because taxes don't exceed the services that all these new people are going to get in. And as to workforce housing, which I just saw mentioned, there's no real definition of that. There's no requirement for the developers of getting all these tax credits that it's going to be affordable. And what is it really? Mm-hmm. Sort of sharecropping, you know?
Yeah, thank you, Sharon. I want our guest, Mike Pichek, to address both of those points that you just brought up. Let's start with the second one. Treasurer Pichek, you mentioned the need for workforce housing. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so there is a very specific definition for that that is commonly used in Vermont. And usually you think of it as 80 to 120% of area median income. So it's above the traditional affordable housing levels in terms of area median income. And that's the goal, is to have that expanded eligibility for folks that are in the workforce. If you're above that threshold, then generally you would refer to that as market rate housing, you know, housing that, you know, that a developer could put out and price at whatever level that they'd like and have whatever income levels rent from them that they would like. But there is a specific definition for workforce housing, as we refer to it in Vermont. And it's really that gap between traditional affordable and market rate. Mm. And to that first question,
yeah,
you know, I think what you need to think about is on the property tax issue, you know, there is a municipal rate. Obviously, you pay your municipal taxes, and then there's the school taxes that are built into the property tax system. Certainly when it comes to the schools, the more people that we can have in our state to broaden the tax base, the more people there are to shoulder that school property tax burden. We've been having a declining school-age population. We've not been growing our economic base the way that we need to help shoulder those costs, the increase in healthcare, the need to pay teachers sufficiently, the additional services that need to be provided by schools. Having a larger tax base certainly would help with that. And on the municipal side, you know, there are potentially some investments that need to be made if you are growing in a community, wastewater, sewer, roads, bridges. But a lot of those things and a lot of the communities that are looking to build have already been invested in. A community like Rutland, for example, they have the capacity to have a significantly higher population than they do now in terms of their infrastructure that's already been built out. Mm. So I would suggest that it's not always the case. Sometimes you do need to build infrastructure for when people are moving to your state, depending on the community. But in large part, Vermont in particular, and many of the communities in Vermont, would benefit from increased tax base, shouldering more of that property tax burden.
Treasurer Mike Pichek, we brought up the various incentives that the state of Vermont has put forth over the last decade or so to attract people to Vermont or get people to stay in Vermont. One of them is the worker relocation program that for a while paid people up to $10,000 who moved here to work. You did a report for the legislature maybe a year or two ago, I think, on the value of that program. Could you tell us what you learned? Because it is something that I hear about every once in a while.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think a couple of the big takeaways were, you know, we did a survey of everyone in the program and asked what were the reasons that you moved to Vermont. And there were always multifaceted. There were always multiple reasons. But the number one reason, again, that people cited was access to the outdoor recreational opportunities and access to nature. And again, I think that is the Vermont advantage. There was also folks wanted to move to Vermont because they wanted to have safe communities. They wanted to have good communities that they knew their neighbors. And then further down the list was the actual incentive to relocate to Vermont. So we have some built-in advantages. We have some built-in incentives in our state that we need to make sure we take advantage of. In that program, there are just a couple of hundred people that took advantage of it. So if you think about the need for growing our workforce, you know, a couple of hundred people really wasn't necessarily moving the needle. But like I mentioned, this was a pre-pandemic program where we were trying to build that demand to come to Vermont. Right now, that demand to be in Vermont is, in my opinion, never been higher. And the question now is, how do we best accommodate that demand to continue to protect the natural beauty and outdoor recreational opportunities, to build out our communities in ways that are climate resilient and safe from climate disaster? How do we build out our communities so we can support more public transportation, support more livable, walkable communities? And I think we can accomplish all of those things, keep Vermont and all of the best parts of Vermont as we all know them, but at the same time, expand Vermont for more people, expand our economy, expand our workforce, and give more people the opportunity to live in our state, and at the same time, making our state more affordable for everyone who's already living here.
Mm. You sound very hopeful. That is a long list of to-dos, Treasurer Picek.
Well, I'm always optimistic about Vermont. I think we have a great state, and we have great people, and we have great people working on these issues as well. And I've never been, I've always been optimistic about our state, but quite honestly, I've never been more optimistic than right now. This post-pandemic period where we're seeing folks move for a whole variety of reasons, including their concern about climate risk from the communities that they're moving from. And they view Vermont as a safe haven, even though we've been dealing with our own climate disasters the last couple of summers. They are not the same kind of disasters that other parts of the country are dealing with on a regular basis. We see folks that are moving to Vermont because of the laws that we have and the way that we protect vulnerable people, and we don't shy away from that. And they say, we want to move to that kind of a state. We have a transgender child, and we can't live in Texas any longer. We can't live in Tennessee any longer. We need to move to Vermont because you will treat our family with dignity and respect and provide the medical care that we need. So I think that's really powerful. And now that there is an opportunity for people to live and work in different geographies, that's a real opportunity for our state. Again, the big challenge for us is to figure out how to accommodate that demand with appropriate housing, both so that folks that live in Vermont now, like David, have an opportunity to buy homes in our state, but also folks that want to move to Vermont, that they have the opportunity to rent and to buy and become part of our communities as well.
Mm. I think just one really big skyscraper will do it. Huge. Biggest in the world. State Treasurer Mike Picek, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no, it was really my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, that is all the time that we have for today's show, which was directed by Mary Angish. Our managing producer is John Ahrens, and our producers are Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener is Rick Barrett, and our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thanks so much for listening, for engaging with us today, too, and we will catch up again soon.